Here we go. That's right. We are family. We are brothers and my sisters and me.
Welcome to Making Change, a podcast of the Chronicle of Philanthropy. I'm Hilde Gottlieb, author of The Pollyanna Principles and co-founder of Creating the Future, where our mission is to make visionary community change practical and doable. It is my privilege to host this podcast, where we talk with change leaders from around the world about this sector's potential for creating visionary social change. My guest today on Making Change is Nancy Hunt. Nancy is co-founder and president of We Are Family Foundation. Immediately following the attacks of September 11, 2001, friends from around the world began contacting We Are Family Foundation's other co-founder, Nile Rodgers, who originally wrote the song that opened this podcast. The overwhelming message Nile received was that the spirit of that song, the knowledge that we're all connected, all family, was a critical message during those initial days of shock and grief. 11 days after the attacks, Nile gathered friends like Queen Latifah, Patti LaBelle, Jackson Brown, Bernadette Peters, Roberta Flack, Dionne Warwick, and 200 others to re-record that song. The version that opened today's podcast is that new, updated version. After seeing the effect of both the music and the Spike Lee video of that recording, Nile went back to the place where he got his start, children's television, to see if he could use the song, as his friends had suggested, as a way to show that we're indeed all one family. The result was a second video, this one including just about every popular cartoon and puppet character of that time, from Sesame Street to Nickelodeon to Disney. Watching the effect of those videos, Nancy and Nile realized that the greatest hope we have for bridge building is the next generation, young people all around the world. From there, We Are Family Foundation took flight. Since then, the projects We Are Family Foundation has initiated have moved far from their musical roots, from building schools in developing nations in conjunction with Build On, to the programs Nancy describes in the podcast. It is my absolute pleasure to have We Are Family Foundation's Nancy Hunt share her observations with us today here on Making Change. My guest today on Making Change is Nancy Hunt. Nancy is the president of the We Are Family Foundation. It's a pleasure to have you with us, Nancy.
Oh, thank you so much, Hilde. Glad to be here.
Could we start out, Nancy, by you telling us just a little bit about We Are Family Foundation?
Oh, it's a long story. I'll keep it short. The We Are Family Foundation was, in fact, founded after 9/11, and it was founded basically by the person who wrote the song We Are Family. And I know everybody is thinking to themselves that they are actually singing the song a little bit in their head. It was founded after 9/11 in response to what was happening. We believe we are family as a common humanity, and what was happening was not cool, wasn't good. And we started this effort to start the healing process, and it was an effort of people coming together to re-record We Are Family, the song, to help those in need at the time. And we decided that maybe the words We Are Family and the fact that the song is probably one of the most well-known songs in the world may have a life after that. So we created the We Are Family Foundation to really promote the concept of a common humanity and bridge building between cultures.
And some of the things that you are doing towards that, briefly, if you can.
I understand. Recently, I have tried to describe the organization as, think of We Are Family Foundation as like GE, the company. GE is the parent company, and under GE, there are a lot of other little brands that create this wonderful organization. So We Are Family Foundation is an organization that has multiple programs that, at the end of the day, each one of the programs teaches diversity, promotes multiculturalism, primarily to children, from kindergarten up through teenagers. And sometimes I consider adults children as well. So sometimes we actually do some things to accommodate them as well.
And this is not just in the U.S.
No, it isn't. I think we would be remiss if we left out the rest of the world if we were talking about our common humanity. So we actually try and create programs that can be used universally. And one such program that we have is called 3.Dash. And that program is designed to work with teens globally. In fact, special teens, teens who are doing extraordinary work to make the world a better place. And we work with them in, I think now we're up to about 28 different countries.
Wow, fabulous. Well, with all of that, and all of the results that you have seen from the work that you have been doing, it's amazing that it's going on 10 years since 9/11. With all of that, when you're seeing change happen, what are you seeing happening that's undergirding that change? What is creating the change that you're seeing in communities?
I think I'll go back to talking about the 3.Dash program. 3.Dash was designed to literally identify teens throughout the world who are doing extraordinary work, but who are not really well known, if you will. And we bring them together in New York City for 1 week to teach them how to tell their stories. Because if you can teach the basics of telling a story, whether it be through the written word, a visual, like a photograph, a still photograph, film, talking to the media, the spoken word, you can actually affect change by being able to tell your story much clearer and amplify your message. That was our concept, to bring these people together in one place so that we could teach them in one place. And we thought that the personal interaction was necessary, unlike some of our board members who felt that we could do everything via the internet. And we sort of balked at that and said, you're right, we could do that, but we probably wouldn't get the change that we were looking for. So to answer your question, one of the things that we've seen is when you put people in a room, and you put people in a room who have never met each other before, you put people in a room from different cultures, from different socioeconomic statuses, from different religions, from all walks of life, they end up being an individual as opposed to what their label is. And when they become individuals, then it's like stripping down and you don't have any other clothes on. You're just you. You're just right. You're just you. And that's what happens. You create an atmosphere that these kids feel comfortable in order for them to share their stories, for them to share why it is they're doing the work that they're doing. And what's amazing to me is we'll have a kid, I'll just say we have a young man that's doing extraordinary work in the country of Colombia. His work is to reintroduce the FARC rebels into the community. That's not a small task.
Yeah.
And he comes from a very high socioeconomic status, social status. And we had another girl who was from Nigeria, and she certainly had never seen an airport, airplane, et cetera, before getting on one and coming to New York. And she's from one of the poorest socioeconomic status groups. And the fact that the two of them were in the same room and they were in awe of each other and had nothing to do with who they were as far as their family. It had everything to do with who they were as people and what their accomplishments were and what their stories were. When people hear people's stories, they can actually relate to them. And I think that's really at the root of why our program is successful. We put people in rooms that don't normally come together, and they do the storytelling, and the stories tell it all.
I'm thinking of the power of that in communities. I'm thinking of quite honestly, individual nonprofit boards where people don't know each other's stories. That we really don't take time to get to know each other's stories. I'm wondering what it takes and what you have found successful in creating the atmosphere where people are comfortable to tell their stories.
Normally, you just have to take them out of their comfort zone.
Mm.
When we're bringing the kids together, most of them have never been to New York City. I mean, very few have. But you've taken them out of their comfort zone. They're in a new place. And, you know, when you're in a new place, you try and make friends. I mean, that's what people do.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing you look at is who that person looks like. You look at their eyes. You look at their skin color. You look at whether they're male or female. You go through all that process. I think it's pretty common for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put them in a situation that breaks down the barriers. And one of the things that we do, and I should try this with our board. We actually have a wonderful gentleman named Robert Galinsky, and he is an improv teacher and with theater groups in New York. And what he basically does is he makes people be silly. He puts them in a circle and says, you know, now you're going to you guys come together in the middle of the circle and act like some hippopotamus and some elephant. And you create a situation where everybody's going to feel embarrassed or silly. And at first it's alarming, and then it's disarming. And that's where the barriers start breaking down, is really when you take them out of their comfort zone and you create a place where everybody has a level playing field.
It's interesting, as I'm listening to you talk, coming outside of the comfort zone, what you're really doing is you're pulling people away from their positions and who they see themselves as in their role, and bringing them back down to being human beings relating to each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as I said, we created this program to do one thing, which was to try and help these extraordinary teenagers explain their stories, amplify their messages. But what in fact we found, what we created, was a place of comfort, of safe space, so that by the time these kids are finished being together for basically 24/7 for a week, they've become a family. And what's interesting is not only have they become a family, and, you know, you go to a lot of conferences and you meet a lot of people and you're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to stay. I'm going to be your best friend forever and forever for life and blah, blah, blah. And then about 2 weeks later, you know, what's that person's name again? I can't remember. Well, in fact, that's not what happens with these kids. And we work with them for a year after they leave us with a mentoring and a stipend program. So we are in contact with them for a very long time, but they become family on their own. And then those kids who we work with for that particular year actually become family members with the ones previous. And now we have the ones that are part of, we call it the alumni. Now they're wanting to know, well, who's the next group? Oh, my gosh, who am I going to meet next? We created a family from 28 countries of teens who are going to be the leaders, not only the leaders of the future, just because of their age and their ability to successfully make change in political or other ways. But they're making change now.
They're making change with each other.
They are. They're making change with each other. They're now as a family. They talk on Facebook. They talk on Twitter. They Skype each other. They do all these things and keep in contact. But what ends up happening is many of them end up working together cross country and cross continent. So one could be working on environmental and climate change in the UK. Another one could be working on health issues in conflict areas in the Middle East. And yet together, they found a project that they could work on together. So they're each doing their own work, but yet they said, wow, you know, hey, I think David could help me with this. I'm going to call him up. And that's what's happened. So now you've created this unique group of individuals who would never have known each other before. And they really couldn't care less about whether they're Hindu or Jewish or Christian or Muslim. In fact, they are always celebrating each other's religions and cultures, and it's a wonderful thing to watch. And if you create that change in young people, that's when they're going to take it as an adult and move that forward. As adults, we've already become jaded to a certain extent. I'm not saying we can't change, but we've become jaded and it's harder to have change. But with kids, it's a lot easier, and they get it. They really get it. And it's not thrown in their face either. You're not teaching them, oh, well, you know, you need to be nice to everybody who looks different or who practices a different religion. You're not promoting that. What you're promoting is just being good global citizens.
I'm fascinated because what you're on the surface teaching each cadre of kids, each cohort, is teaching them to tell their story.
That's right.
But a big piece of what they're learning is how to be in community with others, which they can't help but leverage into their communities. So it's really fascinating to me that when we undergird our work with that solid core of values, that almost becomes regardless of what you're teaching. You happen to be teaching young people how to tell their story in their communities and create more change with the work that they're doing. But when that solid core of values that we will create a safe space where everyone can blossom and be together, when that's what's underpinning your work, then it doesn't really matter what you're teaching on the surface. They're learning that as well.
Exactly. It's something when we first did the program, we didn't have that in mind. We just knew that these kids have important work. We want to help them tell their stories, and they're going to get to meet other kids from other places. And we hoped that they would bond. I mean, you never know. And you never know from class to class either. But in fact, we've replicated it now a couple of times, and it's never let us down. You put people in a room, you disarm them, and you build them and give them more knowledge, and they just become people, individuals who are empathetic with each other.
One of the things that we find in the classes that we teach with consultants is that frequently when folks come into the room from all over the world, just as you say, we have the same circumstance that happens with us, they come from all over. They don't know each other. They don't know what to expect. But the thing that we find over and over is that they do build a strong cohort based on their mutual desire for things to be better, for things to be amazing. They all quickly realize that they all want the same thing. And yeah. That sounds like it's a very, very large piece of really what's going on with you guys, which is why somebody that's dealing with environmental issues in one place and somebody's dealing with human rights issues in another place, it doesn't really matter what the on-the-ground issue is. It's very similar to what we were just talking about, the layers we were just talking about. You're talking about teaching kids to tell their story. The values that underpin that and the vision that underpins that is the building of a common humanity. They may be working on environmental issues or human rights issues, but the values that underpin that are what make them strong together.
That's exactly right.
It's fabulous.
Absolutely. So our kids, and I say that they're not really our kids, but I feel
you
like...
You have a very large family. We are family.
I feel like I'm at least a good aunt. But our kids are extraordinary.
I want to hear some stories. Can you share with our listeners some of the things that these kids are accomplishing in the relatively short period of time?
Sure. I have one of our kids. His name is David. He lives in the northern part of the UK. And a few years ago, you may remember that there were significant, huge floods in the northern part of the UK. Just devastating. And he said to his fellow villagers and family members, you know, why is this happening? It's never happened before in the history of our village, as far as I know. Why is this happening? And sort of the talk of the town was, well, it's climate change. And he said, well, climate change, why aren't we learning about climate change in schools? And he was really disturbed by this. And now, Grant, you know, he's 14 at the time. So he said, well, we should be learning about this. So he wrote up a paper. And he went down to 10 Downing Street, where the prime minister lives, and he talked to everybody in the political system there that would listen to him and said, you know, we need to get climate change in our curriculum. It's important for us kids to learn about. And about 8 months after his trying to get this done, we actually got a letter from the Ministry of Education stating that due in part, now I'll take part. Due in part to David's efforts, we are now going to have climate change in the school system, and this year alone will affect 3 million children.
Ugh.
So he was 15 by the time that actually happened, and he's an extraordinary young man. So when people say, well, you know, I'm just one person, I can't really make a difference. Well, you know what I say, it's a little bit of BS,
but it's okay.
You can make a difference. So he is just an extraordinary young man. He's now 17 and he's doing windmills and organic gardens and schools. I mean, he's just, you know, that sounds a little less exciting than what he was able to do with the education system, but he continues to work and that will be his lifelong work is the environment. We have another young man, an Iraqi. He came to us when he was 15. His family fled to Jordan. And he's in a wheelchair. His name is Musa. And I actually thought that he was in a wheelchair because of a sustained wound that he may have had due to the war. But in fact, it was something that he was born with. he was devastated by hearing that friends of his and family members, community members back in Iraq and some of the conflict areas were dying due to literally minor cuts because they were putting water on it that was diseased water and they were dying from a cut. And he said, this just can't happen anymore. So what he did is he said, I'm going to teach every teenager I know how to do basic common first aid. And I'm going to distribute first aid kits to all of these civilians that need our help. And in fact, that's what he did. So that was at the age of 15. When he came to us, that was his project. And he had affected hundreds of people at that point in time. Right. But he learned that he could actually affect more change by being more of a vocal activist and getting other people to look at problems and take action. So now he's become like a cheerleader and in fact has gone on to speak at Davos. Now he's a university student in Boston and he's promoting activism with students to take charge. I shouldn't leave out the girls. We have extraordinary girls and I will tell you about one of them. She's from Nigeria, and she was betrothed when she was born to a man that when she turned 12, she would wed. And she rebelled against this when she was 9, 10, 11. She said, I don't want to get married. It's not right. And in fact, her parents supported her in that decision, which was unique. Mm-hmm. So she has taken child marriage on as her project. And in fact, in the last, I would say, 6 years, she's now 18. In the last 6 years, she's affected about 23,000 young women in her village and surrounding villages by talking to the elders and actually having them change their minds about this tradition.
I'm just thinking each of the stories that you're telling, it's not just in how they tell the story. It's in building that community around them. David could not have just walked into 10 Downing Street and had magic happen. He had to build something around him that did that. And certainly, as you're talking about this girl in Nigeria who's talking with elders and building something beyond just her.
That's correct. I have to say that 90% of the kids that we work with, the reason they're doing the work they're doing is because they have lived the problem that they're trying to solve. It is not necessarily someone who says, wow, you know, AIDS is a really bad disease. I want to fundraise for AIDS, but has never been personally affected by it. But they could have been affected by a story about it. Most of the kids that we work with have been personally affected in some way of the problem, and therefore they have a passion. They have a passion to do something. And I'm not saying that the rest of the kids who also are experiencing this don't have a passion to want to do something. These kids take action, which makes them different from others. And when you find those individuals and they're amazing on their own, but when you find those individuals and then they realize that they have friends now who are exactly the same as them, that's when also magic happens. So finding those common denominators, finding those commonalities when you don't really think that they're there, you know, certainly what could a person in Botswana have in common with somebody in Colombia other than the fact that they might be the same age? Well, there's a lot in common. And I think people forget that and they have to go back to thinking about what their common humanity is.
And we find that through telling stories, telling our history.
That's exactly right. Another story I'll just quickly share is this year we had a young man, a Muslim young man, and we matched them with mentors, as I had sort of stated before. We have a mentoring program that lasts a year after they come to us in New York. And we match them based on what their project is, and the mentor we look at and say, how can the skills of this mentor actually help amplify and propel the work that this individual is doing? So believe it or not, we matched this young man with a gentleman who is probably third or second in command of a very well-recognized Jewish organization.
Wow.
So I wasn't thinking, nor were the committee members, believe it or not, we weren't thinking about the Muslim and Jewish issue. We were thinking about this person does this, this person does this, and these two things need to come together. Well, in fact, when we did the match, the young man, the Muslim young man, his father was with him as a guardian for the summit and was appalled that wow. matched him with a Jewish man. And it was the young man who said, "Dad, that's what this whole program is about.
Wow.
It's about learning about other people and it's about working together. I want to see if this match actually really works." And not only has it worked, it's worked extremely well. And now the young man's father and the mentor are actually good friends.
It almost sounds like the root of a sitcom.
It does.
We have got the next script for a sitcom going.
Unbelievable.
We sort of joke, but the truth is that the reason that these things become sitcoms is because there's so much reality in it that the power of our connection, and the thing that I'm taking so much out of what you're sharing, is that the power of connection is really all we have.
That's right.
And that the things that I'm seeing you doing is that you're rooting that in stories which connect us. Back to the days of cavemen, we told stories and that's how we survived.
That's right.
And that is really so much of what connects us, but one of the really clear things in some of the stories that you're sharing is the need for us to create the safe space for that to happen.
Yes. Without the safe space, people remain in their space that they're comfortable in.
Yeah.
And that is their status, their ego, you know, all of the things that make us who we are. But if you leave it to everybody's own devices, they're going to stay in that comfort zone because right. obviously that's where it's comfortable. You take them out of that comfort zone and you strip them of everything, you know, the ego, then you create a place that people can share and don't feel intimidated sharing because I'm just a person. I'm a person and yeah. you're a person and we can have a conversation.
Well, and the interesting thing, though, is that there's ways of stripping people of their ego that are really, really seriously harmful.
I agree.
But it is creating that environment where they feel comfortable stripping themselves of that ego, where you're not doing it to them. But if we create a space in community where folks feel comfortable to let down that ego, that's when you see the magic that you're doing. And I'm so glad that you were able to share both your wisdom and your stories with us today. I can't thank you enough for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much. I've been a fan of your work for a long time, as you know, and I'm thrilled to be able to participate.
Thank you so much, Nancy. I hope we will talk again soon.
We will.
Great. I am so grateful for Nancy's willingness to share her observations about the work we, our Family Foundation, is doing. There's so many different success factors in that work, each of which could have a profound impact on this sector's efforts to create change. The first thing that strikes me is how We Are Family Foundation has embedded its end vision and core values, a world united by our common humanity, into everything the organization does. In my book, The Pollyanna Principles, one of those six principles is that being the change we want to see means walking the talk of our values. It is clear in talking with Nancy that a big reason their programs are so successful is that they are indeed being the change they want to see, walking the talk of what that common humanity looks like in everything they do. From that vision of what is possible, We Are Family Foundation has focused on creating an environment that nurtures that commonality. So many programs with diverse populations emphasize the distinctions, emphasizing and often celebrating the separateness of everything from religion to location, from socioeconomic status to the roots of our own egos. Because the core vision and values at We Are Family Foundation are about our common humanity, they instead work hard to create the kind of safe environment where people can be mutually honest, vulnerable, open to each other. Whether it is through improv and play or through learning to tell their own authentic stories, the kids who go through the 3-Dot Dash program quickly become a family in so many senses of the word. Lastly, it's also striking to see the extent to which Nancy and We Are Family Foundation are not just willing, but eager to understand just what it is that is undergirding their program successes. It's clearly not enough for them to sit back and watch their 3-Dot Dash kids create dramatic and rapid change. Instead, Nancy and her team want to know what is really creating that change, so they can be sure to embed those success factors into all the other work the organization does. Our power to create change goes beyond the work we do. It goes to the extent to which we take time to think about that work, and not just how will we fund it or how can we do more of it, but what is making that work successful so we can replicate that? How do we embed our vision and values into every aspect of our work? How do we create an environment where people can authentically be together in that work? How do we dig deep to understand what is really working and why? I hope you will explore these questions with us as we continue this conversation at the Chronicle of Philanthropy's group at LinkedIn. And speaking of connecting, please remember that you can always find great ways to connect, as well as other terrific information, at the Chronicle's website, philanthropy.com, or follow the Chronicle on Twitter @philanthropy. We hope you've enjoyed this edition of Making Change. If you have ideas for guests for this podcast, folks who are driving new ways of thinking about what it takes to create visionary social change, please get hold of me on Twitter. I'm @HildeGottlieb, or at our website, creatingthefuture.org. Thanks for listening and for wanting to create a better future for your community and for our world. For the Chronicle of Philanthropy, I'm Hilde Gottlieb, leaving you as we started today's program, tapping your toes and singing along, this time to the original Sister Sledge version of a tune that says it all. We'll see you the second Thursday of next month here on Making Change.
As we walk on by, and we fly just like birds of a feather, I won't tell no lie. All of the people around us, they say, can they be that close? Just let me state for the record, we're giving love.